Well, the thing about travel is sometimes it doesn't go quite to plan, and it's interesting and sometimes useful to hear about other people's experiences when unfortunate things have happened. You'll hear about a couple now in relation to Bolivia. A book's been written by a couple, Tony Hasty and Amanda Briggs Hasty. It's called Bolivia Tried to Kill Us. You'll hear how in a couple of moments. They spent quite a bit of time trekking and travelling around South America. You'll hear in the next few minutes what it's like to live in the South American country. You'll hear about Bolivia's wonderful sights, the food, and what to be wary of, including piranhas, eyeball soup, and to some extent the healthcare system. First of all, I asked the couple why they decided to go to Bolivia and how long they spent in the country.
We were in Bolivia for 3 months.
Bolivia had always really appealed. It was one of the places that I really wanted to go to. I'd seen a couple of travel shows of Bolivia and seeing all the indigenous culture and all the colour in Bolivia with all the bright fabrics and the history there. And there was so much to go and see. So it was definitely on the must-do list for both of us.
Although it was awesome to visit and very, very cheap to do so, it was awesome to visit.
It was an amazing place, but it's a place I think that you experience rather than enjoy.
That's interesting. I've never heard anybody say that before. So,
well, there was lots of aspects of it we really enjoyed, but there was just that everything is an adventure when you're in Bolivia. You know, you go to get your shopping in the market, and you're having to haggle for everything, and there's crazy cow heads covered in flies everywhere, and you know everything there is like, what the hell is that they're selling, and what are you supposed to do with it? And so everything is an experience. Catching the bus is a crazy experience. You never know quite where you're going to end up and whether your bus is going to make it, and if there's actually a road, or, you know, everything is a little bit crazy and a little bit unknown. And even if you've got good Spanish, like I had pretty decent Spanish, it's a little bit mental. And so it is a place where you go and you have an amazing experience. But it's not like a holiday. You know, I left a piece of my heart there. I think Tony did as well, eh?
Yeah. Well, we got quite used to paying gringo prices, that's for sure. As soon as they see you not Bolivian, they'll always add a bit on. But it was always an interesting battle.
Well, the trick was to sneak up next to a local and listen into what price they were getting and try and negotiate for the same price.
Didn't happen very often, though.
Take me through your Bolivian journey then. Where did you arrive? Where did you first enter the country?
We entered from Chile. We took a 3-day 4x4 tour across the Altiplano, that's the high plains, and across the salt flats to Uyuni in Bolivia, which was basically probably one of the highlights.
You know, you start out, we were coming from the Chilean side, so we started out, you're at up to 5,000 meters in these amazing volcanoes and snow-capped mountains, and you've just got this kind of moon-like atmosphere of snowy, desert, volcano-y rock formations. And then there's a desert there where it's literally like a sand desert called the Dali Desert. And then there were all these places with incredibly colourful rocks, and there were hot pools and geysers, and there were flamingos everywhere, and it was just stunningly beautiful landscapes. And every few minutes you'd drive on to another one and you'd be like, wow, okay, another amazing place. So we used a huge amount of memory space on our phones taking loads of pictures. It was just stunning. Every few minutes something exciting more to see. And in many ways, I mean, the trip is famous for the salt flats, but the salt flats were the most
third best day was the salt flats. The two previous days were awesome.
And I've got a mental picture, correct me if it's a wrong one, of salt flats. I'm just imagining almost like an infinity pool of solid white matter. Is that what it looks like?
Yeah, that's pretty much what it looks like, yeah. And it's very cold there as well.
One of the things with these salt flat trips is they're quite infamous for the drivers being drunk and people being killed in overturned 4x4s. And so you really have to shop around and work out which are the most reputable people to go with, but you don't want to pay massive gringo prices. So, you know, you're never quite sure where you're going and what's going to happen and if you can trust the driver. And the driver usually doesn't speak English or not such good English. So it's, you know, another one of these things where it's part of the adrenaline rush and the adventure of any activity you do in Bolivia is about, are you walking into some crazy situation like a naive gringo?
So it's not for the faint-hearted, then. This is for the confident and certainly advanced traveller, isn't it?
Certainly on the budget we did it on. We were away for a year.
We spent maybe £20,000, £25,000 across that year for both of us.
Did the rainforest occupy a great deal of your time?
Yeah, the Amazon is actually quite a small part of Bolivia. We did get there. Probably one of my main regrets is we got there towards the end of our time in Bolivia when we'd become a bit frugal and quite used to paying Bolivian prices. We settled on a cheap three-day Pampas tour, which is a river cruise, and it was a kind of rack'em and stack'em situation. A lot of people doing it, a lot of people on the river, and I would have probably preferred now to spend a lot more money on something maybe more authentic, going into the jungle a bit further and things like that.
What was your most amazing experience in the jungle then? What will stick with you?
Probably the fact that I got evacuated with the flu. Luckily, we weren't hugely remote. We were probably, was it a 6-hour boat?
Yeah,
boat ride to, and then an hour to the closest hospital, where true to Bolivian standards, they prescribed antibiotics because that's what they do for everything.
We didn't know Tony had the flu. We were a little bit worried it might be malaria or something a little bit more serious. We were staying in this, you know, hut in the middle of nowhere, and his temperature was just off the chart and he was starting to be delirious. And so I was somewhat panicked. But anyway, it turned out just to be a nasty case of the flu. But the flu when you're in 40 degrees of heat is not a nice thing to have anyway. But yeah, we saw huge amounts of turtles and we saw sloths and we saw... Well, Tony got bitten by a piranha.
Went swimming with the dolphins, or more accurately, attempted to swim with the dolphins, but they were having none of it. And yes, got bitten by a piranha, and when I put my feet on the bottom of the river, I also got stung by something. So I got out of that river pretty quickly in the end.
Yeah, they're not really worried about safety standards in Bolivia, so... The same part of the river where you're looking at the crocodiles is the same part of the river where you're swimming with the pink river dolphins and the same part where you also go fishing for piranhas.
So I have a mental picture of piranha now from probably watching a method of bumping off villains in Bond films, that they'll just go for you in a frenetic attack and they'll just, you know, keep nipping away at you until you're all gone. I guess that's not the reality.
There have been cases of piranhas attacking people, but not. I got a single bite. I don't think it was the frenzied attack that the movie makes famous.
Yeah, it's not like in the cartoons, and they certainly weren't biting enough for us to catch that many when we were attempting to.
Well, your book, of course, refers to the fact that Bolivia tried to kill you. I mean, that's obviously, well, there's two, I suppose, attempts on Tony's life in Bolivia there with... what about you, Amanda? What tried to kill you?
Diarrhea. The standards of hygiene in Bolivia are a bit rough. I mean, I mentioned the markets. They don't really have supermarkets except in some of the really big cities. And it's not common to shop in the supermarket. So everything is down the market haggling. And, you know, the kind of thing you'll see is you'll see a little old lady sat there with a blanket on the floor selling meat in the full sun. And Bolivia gets really quite hot. And so you've got all this meat of dubious quality that's not been refrigerated. You know, it's not like you can go to McDonald's or something if you really want to ensure you're having hygienic food in Bolivia. So
McDonald's doesn't actually exist in Bolivia anymore.
So we were eating in all the local cafes, and in fact, they, you know, they had amazing value food and things. So we were going for all their sort of their daily specials and eating their daily specials, which was great. But yeah, I got really sick, and I had salmonella. I don't know, every type of food poisoning going. So I actually basically sat on the toilet for about 2 months, visited the hospital regularly. And every time I went to the hospital, it was another kind of interesting experience and drama with them saying all sorts of random weird things to me. And yeah, I was quite worried for a while. I was really very sick, but I survived. Actually, the healthcare was extremely expensive. And, you know, it's very much a case of healthcare for the wealthy and not for everyone else, which was a bit of a, you know, there's lots of parts of Bolivia and that were quite sad to experience. Yeah, I found Bolivia, when I left Bolivia, I felt just a wee bit broken from having experienced some of the inequality there. I, you know, when I went to see a specialist in, like, I guess, a gastroenterologist or whatever in a hospital in Santa Cruz. And that ended up costing about £100 for that visit. I can't imagine how much £100 is for someone in Bolivia. But to give you an idea, we were paying to live in a really nice house. What were we paying? Maybe £3 or something a day for our accommodation. So it was really nothing. So £100 is a lot of money. And that's what it cost me just to visit the doctor. And then it was another set of money to pay to go and have various tests done and another set of money to pay to have the antibiotics. And it was clearly way, way beyond the reach of most Bolivians. And that was sad.
With that level of clear poverty, did you ever feel as if you were somewhat exposed and a potential target?
We heard lots of stories. Thankfully, we were never mugged or anything like that, but friends of friends were. We were very careful not to withdraw cash after dark and tried not to be too flashy with the, you know, the clothes we were wearing, etc., which after a few months on the road were looking pretty tattered anyway. So I think the whole thing is to try not to stand out. You know, it's difficult not to stand out when you're so different to the general population, but just have to take measures to sort of keep it a bit
conservative. I don't know. I never felt particularly unsafe in Bolivia. There were places I felt unsafe that when we were traveling. In fact, Costa Rica, of all places, is the one place we ran into trouble and I felt unsafe.
And talking about some of those food experiences, we've had obviously the bad side of what happens when food isn't prepared properly. But take me through, well, let's start with the market, actually, the constituent parts. Would you find things on the market that had you scratching your head because you didn't know what it was, for a start?
Totally. I remember seeing these cinnamon sticks. You know, you get cinnamon sticks in the supermarket here and they're like 5 centimetres long or something. They had cinnamon sticks in big buckets there. They were like branches. They were like 1.5 metres tall. And then buying cocoa, you know, they sell pure raw cocoa wrapped in banana leaves. Nothing's packaged and set up the way it is in a supermarket there, really. Everything is the raw ingredients coming from straight from the farms, and the farmers selling it themselves, you know, the papayas and the bananas, and everything's just being driven straight in and sold straight by the people who've grown it, which is really quite cool.
Any unusual meats?
Probably the simple answer to that is yes.
I think they eat every part of the animal.
Yeah, I remember one of the dishes I tried was fried cow's heart, which was very salty. A friend that we met had some sort of eyeball soup at a market that he went to. I never found that, so that was probably quite lucky.
The best thing, though, for us was the juices. So they have all of these juice stands. And, yeah, you turn up and there's these vendors with blenders, as it said in the Lonely Planet. There's all these ladies with a blender there. God knows how they're managing to get that to work. But anyway, and they pull out all this fruit and make you a big juice, and then you sit and drink the juice and it costs you almost nothing. And then they fill you up again and you just keep drinking until you've had enough. And, yeah, we went most days for
most
a juice.
Yeah.
It was great.
So what do you do, if you're certainly in the city, of an evening? Are there sort of formal entertainments laid on? Are there music events, that type of thing?
We spent a lot of time in Sucre. It's a small city. It's not like there was big concerts and things like that. But what there was the marching bands.
Just about every day you'd get a marching band going out for a march down the street.
Constant parades, yeah. With everyone in costume. They're really obsessed with the parades. So it's a source of real pride to have these costumes. They spend an absolute fortune on buying or making these costumes with all of these sequins and everything, all these traditional costumes, and then having all of these parades with special dances for different groups of people from different regions and things.
It's like the whole city was a stage.
Well, then they quite regularly would practice at 5 a.m. as well, which was a little bit annoying.
So what's Sucre look like? I mean, is it one of these sprawling cities that's very sort of overdeveloped with skyscrapers, or is it a very small, low-key sort of former colonial-looking type place?
Sucre is called the White City, so it's full of whitewashed churches and colonial buildings in the centre. And then the further you go out, the more residential it gets, and you get an array of different
shanty town,
yeah,
basically
houses, different quality houses. Probably the highest building we saw there was about three stories.
Yeah. You don't really, in Bolivia, you don't really see skyscrapers. The only place we saw modern buildings really, a little bit in Santa Cruz, which is their biggest, richest city, and a little bit in La Paz when we were there. But really, the money's just not been there for them to build up that massive infrastructure. So what you see more is sort of half-built houses, half falling down, being built bit by bit, story by story, out of whatever materials they can find.
When the builders aren't chewing coca leaves.
Yeah.
I would certainly recommend Sucre. We were in Sucre for 6 weeks, learning Spanish. For me, that failed.
We were living with one of the teachers, actually, so it was like a homestay situation. So we really felt embedded in the culture there.
And how's your Spanish now, Amanda?
Well, now it's quite rusty. I was getting really good. I got to that level where you've got it, you know enough so you can communicate and you can have a conversation one-on-one with someone very easily. Didn't need to get to that next level, so I didn't quite get there.
Have you tried using it elsewhere, though? I mean, I wonder if you speak Spanish with some strange Bolivian accent that you might not realise you have.
Well, I work for an international organization, so I've tested my Spanish out a few times, and people understand me fine. I think that's one of the reasons Bolivia is a great place to learn Spanish, is because they speak the kind of purest, clearest Spanish of anyone.
Are there any cultural tips you'd give?
If you're not religious, sort of don't let on.
Yeah,
they are
very religious.
They're very religious. As soon as people found out we were married, the first question they asked was, "Where are all your kids?" In Bolivia, you get married, you have kids. So they were quite shocked that we didn't have any, especially a man of my age.
They kept looking sadly at me. I think the thing is not to turn up and throw your money around and be a bit arrogant, really. Turn up and, you know, get involved and attend things and, you know, like if you're invited for dinner somewhere, bring something with you, but just in the same way you would at home. They're just really proud of Bolivia, and they've got a lot to be proud about as well. And I think they're very well aware of the amount of wealth that we have comparatively, and they don't need that rubbing in their faces. And haggle for everything. Everything has its price, right? And no one will respect you if you don't haggle in a nice way. And I think just be prepared to pay a few gringo prices.
And finally, I suppose proof of the pudding, well, maybe it's not. Would you go back?
Absolutely.
In a heartbeat.
Yeah. For me, there's a bit of unfinished business. Because we're
piranhas.
I got my revenge on the piranhas in the end. One of the major things that I and I think we wanted to do was a well-known trek. Is it pronounced?
The Yampu Circuit.
And because of illness, we couldn't do it in the end. So that's one thing I'd go back for.
But we've still got friends there. We keep in touch. I would totally go back.
A taster of life in Bolivia. You can read the full book. It's called Bolivia Try to Kill Us, A Year of Trekking and Travelling in South America. And appropriately, you can get it on Amazon.